This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome, everyone, to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen. We are with RotoWire.com. Exciting day. Pacers-Knicks coming up tonight. Game five there, 3-1 Pacers lead. We had OKC already advanced to the finals, so we'll be breaking that down momentarily. We're going to be talking quite a bit about basketball in today's show. We're going to also talk a little best ball football. We've got Brandon Kravitz coming down on the Progressive Guest Line with us, joining us today for that. And then it's Dinger Thursday. So we're going to find some home run props that we like. We're going to be covering that all here on Prop Points. Nick, let's jump right into it, though. Excited about tonight's game. But first, Western Conference Finals. Thunder, they crushed the Timberwolves. You know, always appreciate how the Timberwolves showed up for those that 1 minute of the first quarter before it was a blowout.
Yeah, this one, of course, got away from Minnesota very early on. And, you know, we talked yesterday about some potential blowout concerns for this game. Well, the Timberwolves came out and scored 9 points in the first quarter. The Thunder immediately stretched out that lead, never looked back, you know, ended that quarter on a big run, as we've seen so many times. I mean, Minnesota went, I think, almost 6 minutes without a field goal at the end of the first quarter and even into the second. And the Thunder have a lot of superpowers. They have a lot of advantages over most teams in the NBA. But I think something that we've seen over and over through these first three rounds is the Thunder going on a run to end a quarter and then just continuing on that run, right? You get a break in the action. You get a chance to catch your breath. You get a chance to strategize, change some things up. And it doesn't seem to matter. You know, the Thunder just keep pouring it on. And really, at no point in the first half, at no point in the second half, did you ever get the sense that Minnesota was really going to mount a meaningful rally. You know, they started chucking up threes in the second half, and you know, the final 3-point numbers for Minnesota actually ended up looking semi-respectable, 12 of 30 for about 35%, but they were under 30% from three during the meaningful portion of this game. And that has just been something that has come back to haunt the Timberwolves too many times in these playoffs. They were able to get away with it in round one. They were able to get away with it, you know, due to the absence of Curry in round two, but just too many games where, you know, multiple key players ended up no-showing. And look, I wouldn't call last night a no-show for Anthony Edwards. He finished with only 19 points. Obviously, this will go down as a disappointing series for him. But to me, the credit goes to the Oklahoma City Thunder defensively. I think, you know, a lot of people were all over Anthony Edwards' props last night thinking, man, if he's going to go down, he's going to go down swinging. I felt that way too. He just didn't even have the option, Jeff. I mean, the degree to which they've been swarming him, especially over these last two games of the series, they did it in game one as well. You know, short of Anthony Edwards just playing complete hero ball and chucking up bad shots, I don't even know what he was supposed to do, right? And you know, seeing his comments right after the game, that was kind of the tune that he took, where he's like, man, I didn't get the sense that Anthony Edwards was like disappointed in himself, disappointed in how he played. Obviously, he's disappointed with the result, but I think he was just completely impressed and baffled by what the Thunder were throwing at him defensively.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder what's going to happen in the NBA Finals. One of the reasons why the Thunder are such prohibitive favorites over both either the Pacers or the Knicks, no matter who gets there, is you can pay attention. You know, if you're Tyrese Haliburton, if you're Jalen Brunson, you're looking at, okay, we can see what's happening here in terms of denying the main guy the ball, making somebody else handle it there, putting that pressure on other players to produce, to be able to run the offense. The Thunder are uniquely capable of taking the ball out of that key player's hands, mm-hmm. You know, and Jokic, it showed, was such a problem, such a different type of matchup. They couldn't do that same sort of thing against him, perhaps because of the size, or maybe because he's Jokic, right, and he's on a different planet. This is such a wagon of a team. And now we're really, really seeing that. I want to ask you, Nick, what's the next step for the Timberwolves? You know, we saw a couple of times Rudy Gobert just got buried in the rotation. Same thing happened last night. Once they fell behind, they needed offense. He was just, you know, I think he played 19 minutes last night. Yeah. What do the Timberwolves do this offseason?
Yeah, well, that was the exact reason we wanted to stay away from Gobert in the prop market, because if the Timberwolves fall behind, they can't keep him on the floor. Even though they're better defensively with him out there, you need scoring, and Rudy Gobert is not really going to generate any of that on his own. You know, Minnesota made their big move this past offseason, right? I don't know necessarily what you look at right now as the, you know, kind of the future payroll of this team. I mean, Rudy Gobert is under contract for $35 million next year, $36.5 million the year after, and then he has a player option in 27, 28. He's still a great defensive player. He's still effective, but you know, we've now seen this in multiple situations where he's a difficult piece to scheme with, right? I mean, there are advantages when you have Rudy Gobert, but there are big offensive disadvantages. And, you know, the Timberwolves have kind of cast their lot with that. And we're getting to the point in his career where, yeah, he's not a bad player by any means. It's not a bad contract per se, but it's not a contract that many teams around the league would be looking forward to taking on, you know, in this new CBA, this new cap environment. That's a lot of money to commit to essentially a defensive specialist who just played 19 minutes in the biggest game of the season. You know, Julius Randle has a player option this summer. That'll be a big one. You know, does Minnesota want him to pick that up? Do they pursue something longer term with Randle? You know, we kind of saw the good and the bad of Julius Randle in these playoffs, more so the bad when it mattered most. So in terms of like obvious flexibility, there's not a whole lot that makes sense right now for Minnesota. You know, you hope for some of these younger guys who showed flashes throughout the season, someone like Terrence Shannon, someone like Rob Dillingham, even Nikhil Alexander-Walker. You know, you're expecting kind of internal development, I think, from those guys more than anything else, because even if you try to move Rudy Gobert, like you might just be taking a loss on that deal. And again, they made their big swing with the cat trade last year.
That's true. That's absolutely true. Hypothetical final, game one of the finals against the Pacers. Thunder are 9-point favorites. Hypothetical series prices. Thunder -800 against the Pacers. Pacers +550. -700 against the Knicks. Knicks +500. Shows where the betting market thinks of potential matchups. Maybe that's just perception of the strength of the Pacers vis-a-vis the Knicks, or maybe just a matchup perception. But either way, massive favorites for the Thunder going forward.
Yeah, if we're to assume that Indiana makes it through, OKC would be -800 on that series price, which would make them the heaviest favorite in the NBA Finals since the 2017 and 2018 Warriors, who were roughly -2,000. Over the Cavaliers in both of those series, which is insane because those Cavs teams, especially in 2017, were really, really good. And of course, that was when Kevin Durant was in Golden State, and that price made sense because I believe those two finals were 4-1 and 4-0. By comparison, 2 years ago, the Denver Nuggets, who had a pretty advantageous matchup, I thought, against Miami, they were only -430 to win that series. Last year, Boston was -225 to beat Dallas. So we're looking at, you know, if you take the last 15, 20 years, I mean, borderline historical odds in terms of how favored OKC will be. We already have a number up for a potential game one against Indiana at DraftKings. Thunder listed as 9-point home favorites. Total would be 233. These are the two fastest paced teams in the playoffs. And again, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, Jeff, but if it is indeed Thunder Pacers, I think the Thunder's defensive ability, their ability to force turnovers, turn those into points versus Indiana's ability to take care of the ball. I mean, they've been arguably the best in the league outside of OKC in that regard this season. I know the Thunder are big favorites. I would pick the Thunder to win the series, but I think all things considered, this could be a really fascinating finals.
I hope so. I hope so. Hopefully we get there again. Self-hating fan of my own teams. You know, I'm not going to get too far ahead of ourselves here. And yet I'm going to get too far ahead of ourselves here because we're going to talk about finals MVP. There's finals MVP odds up there. They are prohibitive. You look at what, you know, if we talk about the series odds, well, the finals MVP odds, I think, are even less bettable.
Yeah, well, of course, it's no surprise that SGA took home the Western Conference Finals MVP award on Wednesday night. And, you know, like when the series started, he was -310 to win that award. Price was down to -2,000 heading into game five. And of course, he is the odds on favorite to win finals MVP. I will say, Jeff, I mean, unless you think OKC is losing the finals, I don't really see a reason to wager on this market. You know, SGA -575 right now at DraftKings to win finals MVP. You go all the way down to 40-1, where you find Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren, 75-1. You know, I looked this up earlier this morning. Since 2000, the only regular season MVP to then win the finals and not win finals MVP was Stephen Curry in 2015. And, you know, that took a really unique set of circumstances where, like, LeBron James on the losing team got some of the votes. You know, Curry had a substandard series. You know, Andre Iguodala got a lot of credit for what he did defensively. But I mean, history strongly dictates that when you have a kingpin player on a really good team like SGA, and there's not, you know, another necessarily, like, you know, big time all NBA caliber player on that team, it's going to go to SGA. I mean, again, think of what would have to happen here for SGA to not win finals MVP. He'd have to be clearly outplayed by a teammate. He'd have to have a way below average series by his standards. and the Thunder would still have to then win that series. Like, is it possible that could happen? Sure. I guess that's what happened with Stephen Curry in 2015. But to me, it's not really worth considering. You know, I think if SGA plays badly enough in this series that he's not in consideration for finals MVP, then there's a pretty good chance that the Thunder aren't winning the series outright.
Indeed. Are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use, rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15 at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. All right, Nick, let's turn our attention to New York and Indiana, game five. Comment we made before the show. If the Knicks don't win, does Tibbs keep his job? I know a certain producer, rhymes with Cohen, thinks that he should not.
I would be very surprised if they go in that direction. You know, certainly you could make the case that, you know, given the matchup, you know, they come in favored, and if they end up losing this series, yeah, it's a big disappointment. You know, it's a lot different than, you know, falling down at the hands of Boston or even Cleveland. But I think Tibbs kind of has the ear of this team, right? I think Tibbs is kind of ingrained with this group that they've brought in. And could you do better? In theory, yes, but I also think you could do a lot worse. And look, I think a lot of the blame for how the series has played out so far is on Tibbs. But I don't think they would fire him. I would be very surprised if that's a move the Knicks make.
Yeah, I think it's less blame and more credit is the way I would do it. That Indiana's just played very well. We'll talk more about this game. We got Play It or Pass It coming up next with these props from this game. This is Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen. One day baseball game. It's a makeup of the rainout last night between Atlanta and Philly. Philly up 2-0, bottom of the fourth. Should be 5-0, but Michael Harris just robbed Max Kepler of a home run. AJ Smith-Shawver started for the Braves. Got knocked out with got a ball hit off his ankle on a comebacker there. So the Braves, going to be testing their bullpen really hard and heavy here today with the doubleheader on top of the starter only going 2 2/3. So tough break there for the Braves. We're going to be talking more baseball later in the show. Right now, though, it's time for Play It or Pass It, one of our favorite segments of all time. And it's dealing with tonight's Knicks and Pacers game. Before we do our first player to pass it, I know you had a couple of individual ones we didn't get to at the top of the show here. You have a couple of favorite plays for tonight, Nick.
Yeah, we're going to keep a pretty tight card tonight. As we get later into this series, I do like the Pacers on the money line. We'll talk a little bit more about that one later in the show. Maybe, just maybe, that may be my G-Bank best bet of the night. But I do like the Pacers to close this thing out. And, you know, my favorite prop, as I've been digging through this morning, Jeff, Josh Hart, over 18.5 points plus rebounds, minus 125 at DraftKings. It hasn't been a great overall series for Josh Hart, especially offensively. You know, he had 5 turnovers. He fouled out of game 4. It's kind of been a comedy of errors in some ways. But Karl Anthony Towns, you know, coming in questionable with that knee. We'll see if he plays a full workload. Is he as aggressive as he normally is? I think there could be some more opportunity, both offensively and on the glass, for Josh Hart, who did have a double-double. He was over 20 points plus rebounds in game 4. Bottom line, this is a kitchen sink game for the New York Knicks. And I know Hart's minutes have kind of vacillated a bit more than normal throughout this series, but I think we see more of him tonight.
Yeah. Moreover, Mitchell Robinson was minus 20 in game 4 too. So you might just see more Hart minutes period also. So I like that one too. All right, let's talk Play It or Pass It. First one, Jalen Brunson, over 39.5 PRA, minus 125. Mm-hmm. Play it or pass it.
So interestingly, this is the same number that we had for Anthony Edwards last night, which did not go well. Frankly, I would not be shocked if we see a Pacers avalanche at some point tonight. I'm not saying they're going to be up 33 at the half. I think the Knicks will put in a much better effort than Minnesota did last night. But again, Indiana has all the momentum. They don't fear playing in Madison Square Garden. Looking at Brunson, went for 31 in game 4, but still came up short of this number on the PRA. Had just 5 assists and 2 rebounds. He is averaging just over this number for the playoffs overall, about 40.5 points plus rebounds plus assists. I think I will play this one, Jeff, under the belief that if the Knicks are going to bow out tonight, it's going to be going down with Jalen Brunson swinging. You know, I mean, his ability to get to the free throw line in this series has been huge as far as establishing a floor for that scoring. I mean, he's averaging double-digit free throw attempts per game for the series. I do wonder, though, stamina-wise, like, what does he have left? I thought Brunson ran out of gas in game four on Tuesday night. Had 15 points in the second half. 13 of those came in the third quarter. Took only three shots, only played 8 minutes in the fourth quarter. Now, in terms of the minutes load, I don't think we see that kind of restriction again. I think all bets are off tonight. I think Tibbs, if he is going to go down, he's going to go down with Jalen Brunson. So again, it's a kitchen sink game for the New York Knicks. I know the numbers say they've had success with either Brunson or Cat on the floor, but I think Tibbs rolls with his guy tonight. I think we see, you know, could be a 40 plus minute night for Jalen Brunson. So I think the volume will be there. We'll play the over 39.5.
Nobody exemplifies today's NBA more than maybe Karl Anthony Towns with that near flat-footed line drive three-pointer from a big man, but it works for him. It's effective. So over 1.5 made threes for Cat at minus 130. Play it or pass it.
Yeah, this is a tough one because, again, Towns is listed as questionable, you know, suffered that knee injury late in game four. I do expect him to play. I'm not a doctor. I just want to be clear. I know there's been some confusion, people wondering, like, is Nick actually a doctor? No, I am not.
Dr. Nick.
But that, to me, it looked like a knee-to-knee collision. You know, it didn't look like anything too serious. And look, your backs are against the wall here. Your season could be over if you lose. I think Cat's going to be out there. But it is fair to wonder how effective he'll be. He took only two threes in the last game. Prior to that, he took 7, 5, and 8. So that's the kind of volume that we're looking for. I think I will play this one. You know, again, I think he pushes through the knee issue. And if anything, Jeff, you know, I'm spinning this yarn that, you know, maybe it dissuades Karl Anthony Towns from getting to the rim. Maybe he spends more time on the perimeter if that knee is giving him trouble. So it's a bit of a dice roll, but the Knicks are going to need him offensively tonight, you know, especially if they're playing from behind. So two made threes for Karl Anthony Towns, minus 130. We'll take it.
So says yarn spinner, Dr. Nick Whalen here. Play it or pass it. Josh Hart, over 8.5 rebounds. We've covered this one here. This is in your wheelhouse.
Yeah. We don't have too much to say on this one. If I like Josh Hart, points plus rebounds, he could very easily have more rebounds than points. That's kind of how it's gone for him in this series. He's gone over in three of the four games so far, four of his last five overall, dating back to the Boston series. Like you correctly brought up earlier, you know, do they stick with Mitchell Robinson in the starting lineup? You know, how much of a leash does he have? You know, whenever Robinson's off the court, that just opens up more rebounds for guys like Josh Hart. And, you know, with Cat's knee, you know, I think that gives Hart a potential boost in terms of his aggression on the boards. His total rebound percentage for the series sitting at about 18%, which is pretty good, especially for a guy of his size. It's actually better than his season long figure. So getting this at 8.5, I know there are some 9.5s out there in the market. This is one we have to play. He's hit this in 9 of 16 games in the postseason.
All right, very good. Let's move on to our next play it or pass it, Pacers style. Tyrese Halliburton, double-double, minus 155. This price keeps going up.
Mm-hmm. It sure does. And he has a double-double in 3 of 4 games in this series. He, of course, had 15 assists in game four, also had 12 boards. He's averaging 18 potential assists per game for the series, had 24 potential assists in game four, had, you know, 13 adjusted assists for that game. So he's actually converting fewer of his assists in the series overall, Jeff, than would be expected, which seems crazy, you know, considering how well the Pacers have played offensively. But the numbers say he's actually leaving a little bit on the table there. You have to think the Knicks will scheme against Halliburton beating them as a scorer tonight, given what happened in game four. With that said, I'm going to pass on the double-double bet because I don't like the price at minus 155. I mean, this was plus 100 heading into game four. Obviously, the rebounds are a part of that price. He had 12 in game four, but that was his only double-digit rebounding game of the entire season. He only had 6 games all year, including the playoffs, with more than 7 rebounds. That's a sample of almost 90 games. So I think we should focus on the assists here. That's going to be the key. I would rather just take Tyrese Halliburton over 9.5 assists at a better price, minus 125. You know, that's the far, far more likely path to a double-double anyway. So just give me the over 9.5 assists at minus 125. We'll play that.
All right, very good. I got a couple more Pacer ones we want to talk about, but first, smarter bets start with VSiN Pro, and now is the time to join. Through May 31st, lock in 14 months for just $199, 2 extra months free when you use promo code PRO at checkout. That's less than 90 cents a day for a daily email with best bets from VSiN hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 live video and replays on the VSiN Watch app, full access to VSiN.com's analytics, trends, and expert breakdowns, plus get the 2025-26 NFL betting guide when it drops this summer. This limited-time offer ends May 31st, so don't miss out. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe and use promo code PRO to sign up now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. All right, Nick, we have one more on play it or pass it, and I've got a personal one to ask you after that. But Pascal Siakam, over 20.5 points, -110.
Look, I'll keep things above board here, Jeff. I'm the wrong guy to ask about Pascal Siakam. I cannot time the market right on Siakam. I mean, he's had 17, 39, 17, and 30 points, respectively, through these first four games. And really, the big differentiator for him has been the three-point shooting. He's a combined 6 of 9 from three in the two games that he's gone over this number. He's 0 of 3 from three in the two games where he went under 20.5 points. The fast break points have also been a part of this. 22 fast break points for Siakam in those two over games, just 8 in the two when he went under. I do like the Pacers tonight, so I think I have to play this, right? It's hard to imagine them winning this game at MSG without Pascal Siakam giving them, you know, decent contributions. It's not going to be at the top of the card by any means, but he's just continued to prove me wrong throughout this series. He's handled the Ananobi matchup just fine. He's been fine when Karl Anthony Towns guards him, and he has feasted when he gets switched onto Josh Hart or Mikal Bridges. He's a combined 15 of 24 from the field. He's drawn 4 shooting fouls, 36 points on 55 possessions for Pascal Siakam when he's defended by Hart or Bridges. I can't go under, Jeff. I can't go under. He's burned me too many times. We got to play this one.
All right. We haven't talked about our favorite guy, your favorite guy, your favorite bot guy to bet at the very least, Andrew Nembhard, not present on our betting card at this point in time. The prop, the points prop is at its standard 11.5. You can get it at a +100 right now. Play it or pass it.
Oh man, I was hoping this wouldn't come up. I went a little too hard on the Andrew Nembhard markets, and now I'm like scared to bet him one way or the other. I think I bought in a little bit too much, and then, you know, this has just not been his series. Really didn't shoot it well in game four, although I thought he got a couple bad whistles. Look, 11.5, it's low enough that if you had asked me this like 4 days ago, I would have said absolutely, it's probably my best bet of the night, and we're getting it at +100. Why not? Let's make it a queen.
Let's go.
We'll take the
yes.
Over. If you give me plus money, we got to take it, play it.
Yeah, for sure. And theory of the case, they're going to try to keep the ball out of Halliburton's hands. I think they go that route. Brandon Kravitz is going to join us next. We're going to talk NFL best ball on Prop Points.
Watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson here with you. Very small baseball slate on this Thursday. We do have a doubleheader, though, between the Braves and the Phillies, making up yesterday's rained out game. We're in the bottom of the fifth in game one of that doubleheader. Phillies leading the Braves 3-0. AJ Smith-Shawver ended up leaving the game, took a ball off the ankle, so we'll monitor his status. Christopher Sanchez still on the mound for the Phillies. He's given up 4 hits, 5 strikeouts, 2 walks through 5. We got our friend Brandon Kravitz stopping by the show. He joins us on the Progressive guest line. Brandon, welcome in. I'd like to talk some basketball with you. We like to talk football. You could talk baseball. That's why we love having you on the show. And today we want to talk some NFL best ball. We are in the thick of best ball draft season. Usually right after the NFL draft is when that really starts to ramp up, whether you're playing on Underdog, Sleeper, DraftKings, Drafters, etc. Feels like new platforms are popping up every day. But a couple questions for you right off the bat, Brandon. I mean, this time of year, how many best ball drafts are you jumping into? Do you feel like early on you could gain an edge now versus when we have more information and we get closer to the season? I'll tell you, I like to use best ball drafts primarily as a way to evaluate draft trends, see where rookies are going, essentially test the market, you know, on some of my early opinions.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the way to use it, is as a prep guide more than anything else. I'm not at the point where I'm going to be drafting in any leagues where there's a significant buy-in or a significant payout. I'm still trying to get a lay of the land, understand where the values are. I'm really like at this point in the season, once we get past the NFL draft, I want to see how I feel about the rookies and their new landing spots, how the market feels about the rookies in those landing spots. And then really that's where rounds 1 through 5 come into focus. It's not going to be until after the fireworks of the 4th of July that I start diving in to those later rounds, the values, the flyers, the sleepers, if you will. And I think best ball just allows you a chance to draft with anybody that's hopping in a best ball draft and spending even $2 to get in. These are individuals that at least have some semblance of an idea of what they're doing, and that gives you a better read than hopping into a free mock draft on ESPN or Yahoo or something like that, where it's auto pick city once you get to round 3.
One thing I think that's different with best ball drafts rather than managed teams is the concept of stacking and how important it is to kind of align players on the same offenses. Is, you know, obviously you have to pay attention to schedule a little bit more because you have there are no pickups. You have to worry about bye weeks. So how important to you is stacking, and do you have favorite particular stacks that you like to do with best ball drafts?
So I'm not an anti-stack guy. I'm just not a stack guy. I see the merit in best ball. I understand where it has some value. It makes absolutely zero sense in season-long leagues. It's one of my biggest pet peeves when I get questions from people about, should I stack this quarterback with this wide receiver in season-long leagues that just has almost zero value to it. I get it in best ball. You basically want to lock in the production on potent offenses. That's just not how I draft. I want the best player and the best player, the best value in each round. And I'm not going to pass on talent that I like better because I have somebody else in a similar offense. I look at somebody like a Jackson Smith and Jigba, who I would have ranked higher than Devontae Smith, and I think most would as well. If I already have A.J. Brown on my team, I'm not going to take Devontae Smith over JSN because I have A.J. Brown. To me, that's not a good enough reason, and most of the time, I end up just shying away from that. So I like to sort of trip into stacks rather than target it, because then I feel like I always leave value on the board, and that's the last thing I want to do.
Right. I get that. And I think in best ball, it's the other thing that's interesting. Conversely is, you know, in season leagues, we like to get the handcuffs for our top running backs. We like to get the top backup in case something happens. You know, it's hard to find on the waiver wire sometimes. In best ball, you don't want to do that. You want to have as many guys playing in any given week as possible there. So you want to try to end up with, like, you know, different teams more often than not, unless there's like just an obvious pivot. I think that's one of the other things that's interestingly different.
For sure. And that's one of the reasons why, for me, my drafting strategy is almost completely different in best balls as opposed to a season-long league. I want spike potential each week. I'm not interested in steady Eddie players, whereas in a season-long league, I want to make sure that I have a couple of those on my team. I want boom or bust players, but I want boom or bust players that are going to play. I will fade injury risks way harder in best ball, because if a guy gets hurt in a season-long league, you can target his handcuff. You can pilfer on the waiver wire. You can make a trade. There are ways to mitigate that disaster. If that happens in best ball, you are simply screwed. So for me, someone like Christian McCaffrey, because of his draft capital, is much lower for me in best ball. I will avoid someone like that at all costs, because you just can't afford to have zeros on your roster.
We'll have more for Brandon Kravitz in a moment, but first, take your betting to the next level with First Bet. Whether it's Santa Anita, Gulfstream Park, or Saratoga Racecourse, First Bet puts the action at your fingertips. You can sign up now at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And make sure you use the promo code BEASAN200 to score a 20% rebate on all of your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Bet smarter today over at firstbet.com. And again, make sure you use that promo code BEASAN200. Brandon Kravitz from RotoWire joins us on the Progressive Guest Line, talking some NFL best ball. Brandon, one of the common tropes when we talk about best ball is that wide receiver values tend to be significantly inflated compared to what you might see in your home redraft league. People love stacking early receivers, even in half point PPR leagues. Do you tend to follow that trend, or do you find that, especially on certain platforms, this might create value at other positions early in the draft?
I just don't think you can avoid taking wide receivers. You're sort of pigeonholed into that in best ball because they fly off the board so quickly. So if you don't get into the receiver market quickly, you're not going to have a good best ball roster. That's just simply the way that it is. You'd have to get so ridiculously lucky with late round value. So I just think it's one of those things you kind of have to do. It similar in a sense to, you think about how you used to draft in the early 2000s in a season long league. You had to take running backs early, otherwise you were way too behind the eight ball. That is the modern day best ball for wide receivers. If you don't have a couple of good ones early, you just simply can't compete in this format, because what you're after are those spike weeks, and nobody is going to give you that more than wide receivers. And it's far more predictable that the best wide receivers are going to give that to you. Quarterbacks will give it to you as well. It's a lot easier to find three of those guys that can give you that production later in the draft. And that's another one of those things. The quarterback position for me is one that I treat completely different. I'll take one. I could take them late and then balance on the waiver wire. I'm not leaving a best ball draft without three quarterbacks on my roster. And so I want to get one of those guys in that Kyler, Baker, Mahomes range, you know, the former Big 12 quarterbacks. I want to get one of those guys and then add a Tua or a Penix a little bit later on, guys that I think can have explosive weeks here and there throughout the course of the season.
Let's talk about who some of your guys are. And I see Brian Thomas Jr. high on the list. I'm assuming you like him on its merits and not just a curry favorite with your future co-host, Nick Whalen.
No, that is not the case. It's like at least 10% of sucking up to Nick Whalen, because we will be hosting Prop Points together on Monday. Very much looking forward to that. But I really like the value that's been created because of the Travis Hunter pick. I feel like people are starting to dock Brian Thomas Jr. We don't even know that Travis Hunter is going to be a good wide receiver in the NFL. And I feel like this is a sidebar, but I feel like his stat projection this year is way bloated. It's overinflated. And yes, I think it creates value for Brian Thomas Jr. in fantasy as well in betting, because he is a legit number one, takes the top off the defense. He gives you those spike weeks. He is a perfect candidate for best ball. I'd have no problem if he's my number one wide receiver. I love the aforementioned Jackson Smith and Jigba. He takes over as the number one option and perhaps even gets a quarterback upgrade in Sam Darnold. So I think the offense starting to be built more around him. Brock Bowers, to me, in a format like this, is a first round pick for sure, because I feel much better about him than every other tight end. Let me lock up that position and move on. I love Omarion Hampton, the fit in that Jim Harbaugh offense. Once they get Najee Harris out of the way, which will probably take about a month, Omarion Hampton should be off and running from there, pun intended.
Brandon, excellent stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking some time out of your day, talking some best ball with us. We'll have plenty more off-season fantasy talk coming your way, especially as the NBA season comes to a close. And like Brandon said, he'll be stepping in, co-hosting with me on Prop Points this coming Monday. I know you'll be mixing in on a few shows while Jeff is gallivanting around Europe later in June as well. So very much looking forward to that, Brandon. Enjoy your weekend, man, and we'll be prepared for a full Jaguars 1 hour special on Monday.
All right, thank you so much. I look forward to it. Suit and tie, ready to go for Monday. Let's ride.
Brandon Kravitz, everybody, always bringing us great stuff. We got baseball bets coming your way on the other side up next on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into Prop Points. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson, bringing you home here in the final segment, taking you up to 2 p.m. Eastern. As always, Make It Rain with Adam Schein coming up next here on VSiN. He's going to have VSiN's Patrick Maher on the show today, giving his best bets for Game 5 between the Pacers and the Knicks. Coming up later this afternoon, it's Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard. That starts up at 4 p.m. Eastern. VSiN Primetime coming your way at 7. Got a few things around the sports world to keep you posted on. Braves-Phillies, our lone baseball game in action. Game 1 of a doubleheader. Phillies hanging on to a 3-1 lead. We are in the top of the sixth there, two outs. Braves do have runners on the corners. Sean Murphy with an RBI single earlier in the sixth, responsible for the lone run for the Braves. Rafael Marchand, he's got a 2-run homer. Trey Turner as the other RBI for the Phillies. Talk more about the second game of that doubleheader in a moment. We also have the Memorial going on, Jeff, in the golf world. Ben Griffin, your solo leader, 7-under, 65. He is in the clubhouse. Colin Morikawa sitting at 5-under through 17. Shane Lowry in at 3-under. Max Homa, he continues to have a nice run. He's at 3-under. Tommy Fleetwood also sitting at 3-under. And Scottie Scheffler, one of the late tee times today, just birdied number 5. He is 1-under as he plays number 6. All right, Jeff, let's talk some Braves-Phillies because that's the next game on our ledger. Game one of that doubleheader in action right now. No Bryce Harper in the lineup to begin the day. No Ronald Acuna, by the way, for the Braves as well. We will see if Bryce Harper is out there tonight. I personally don't think that's going to happen, Jeff, but the Phillies have not closed the door.
Yeah, the note we had before the game was that Harper hasn't swung since getting hit on that elbow, still has some inflammation on that. So we've seen some line movement in that game. It, you know, originally it was minus 118. It's now minus 112. Speaking of Acuna, he just had a pinch hit RBI single. So that first game is now 3-2. Shows that Acuna is just fine. He was just getting his first day off since coming back. Fun pitching matchup, though, tonight in game two. Chris Sale versus Zach Wheeler. Very excited to see this one here. Wheeler was originally in a pitch in game one. They moved him in the nightcap here. He's been rolling. He gave up exactly one home run in each of his first 8 starts, none of his last 3. Chris Sale's been pitching very well since a rough start to the season as well. There are no home run props available on this one here, but I would say check on Matt Olson when they go up. Since it's Dinger Thursday, I'm trying to mention a home run prop from every game. So Olson is a guy I'd highlight on. If it's like plus 400 or better, I would go in that direction there. But I like the under. I just think the two starting pitchers are going to be the carry of the day on this one there. Under 7.5 at minus 118 is my bet for that game.
Let's take a look at the Athletics and the Blue Jays. This one in Toronto, Blue Jays minus 148 on the money line. You can get the A's at plus 140. A little bit of an elevated total for this one at 8.5. Jacob Lopez taking on Jose Berrios. I know we got a couple home run pops here, Jeff, in addition to a play on that total.
Yeah, exactly. And first of all, the money line has moved a lot. Originally 148, now 166 in favor of Toronto. I don't mind going the opposite direction of the movement. I think that's been okay so far in the past. So if you want to go Athletics, and I know they're not playing good ball right now, but if you do want to go the Athletics, you can get a plus 140 price. And I don't mind fading Jose Berrios. A 5.19 home ERA. He's allowed 10 homers this year, 5 of those at home. Over the last 3 years, or 2.5 years, he's allowed 38 homers versus lefties. So I'm kind of seeking out a couple of lefty power hitters on this one here for Dinger Thursday. Tyler Soderstrom at plus 450. Lawrence Butler at plus 425. Meanwhile, overall, Jacob Lopez has been pretty good at suppressing homers, at least this year. I think he had a decent home run rate when he was with Tampa last year, but overall, you look through his career, not a big home run guy. So I don't really have a specific Toronto home run guy. I do think this is going to be a higher scoring game. I like the over 8.5 on this one at minus 118.
Let's move on to the Rays and the Astros down in Houston. Astros minus 115 on the money line. Total coming in at 8. This is Shane Baz going up against Ryan Gusto. Another game, Jeff, where you were just loaded up with home run props.
Yeah, and this is one to seek out. This is definitely one to seek out. Gusto is in the rotation almost by default. They have so many starting pitcher injuries, you know, the latest being that they just lost, they lost Hayden Wesneski for the year. They lost Ronel Blanco for the season. They're down quite a bit right now. Gusto is someone we want to attack. He's allowed 6 homers in about 36 innings. All those homers are by left-handers. So this is one I definitely want to target. The total has moved up in this game. Originally started at 8. It's now 8.5. And on the other side, Shane Baz, the pitcher for the Rays, has already allowed 10 homers, 7 in his last 5 starts. Of those 10 homers, 7 by right-handers overall. So there's a few players I want to target. I don't mind, you know, sometimes you want to go opposite of the handedness. I'm not going to avoid a righty versus Baz. I'm going to go with Isak Paredes. When Paredes was traded to the Astros in the Kyle Tucker deal, we all thought, okay, Paredes is really going to like those Crawford boxes in Houston. Sure enough, he does. 7 homers at home of his 11 homers. It's also, he had 3 homers last week against the Astros, his former club. Against the Rays, his former club. I think he does it again tonight off of Buzz. It's at plus 500 for Isak Paredes. Mm-hmm. On the Rays side of things, I'm going to go with lefties. All 6 homers by Gusto allowed are by lefties. So Brandon Lau at plus 400, already 11 homers this year. Josh Lowe, only 2 homers so far, which is why you get a nice 550 price on him. I think he's capable of doing so against Gusto. So 3 home run props. If one of them hits, it pays for the other 2. So let's go that route.
All right, we finish out in the true late window out west. The Nationals on the road in Seattle. This one close on the money line. Seattle minus 112, Washington plus 100. Another game sitting at 7.5. Mackenzie Gore taking the hill. Lefty for Washington going up against Emerson Hancock. I know you got a money line play here, and believe it or not, a couple more dinger props.
So my favorite money line play to make, and I kind of hit a couple times last night, is going with the team getting plus money because you got the better pitcher. It happened with Paul Skeens at a principal bet, and that had happened in a big way. It's happened a few other times too. I think we got a pretty big split between the starting pitchers tonight. Mackenzie Gore going for the Nationals, Emerson Hancock for the Mariners. I get that Hancock has pitched better in his last 2 outings, but he's allowed 8 homers and 8 starts, including 5 in his last 3 starts. So this is not a great starting pitcher. Gore has kind of taken the leap. He has some bad luck, but he also gets a ton of strikeouts. And the Nationals went big against George Kirby last night, 3 homers against him, 4 total. So I like the Seattle. I like the money line against Seattle. Washington money line plus 100. But I also like a couple of home run props. I like Julio Rodriguez, to get one against the lefty Gore. 5 of Gore's home runs have been allowed on the road. The lefty, go with the lefty righty matchup there. Julio plus 550. I think that's a really good price for a player of his skills. I wanted to say James Wood at 15 homers so far this year, homered last night, but that price isn't so great at plus 330. You can play it, but it's not a great payout there. Nathaniel Lowe at plus 4025, I think, is a little bit better. If you want to go CJ Abrams, he's at plus 400. I think those are a couple other options you could go with there.
Is there a way, Jeff, that you could just parlay all of the Lowe / Lows in Major League Baseball? We got Josh Lowe, we got Brandon Lowe, now we got Nathaniel Lowe.
That's right. I named all 3, didn't I?
Yeah,
go to Lowe's or something like that. This is not a sponsored segment. Sorry, Beeson. I probably missed out on an opportunity for you here. Yeah, I'm sure you could. Again, if you live in a place where you can do that sort of thing, have some fun. Obviously the odds are pretty, you have to get some pretty good payout there to parlay them and all right. That. But sure, let's have some fun.
All right. Well, to recap, all of the Jeff Erickson dinger props we're looking at tonight, Tyler Soderstrom, Lawrence Butler, Josh Lowe, Brandon Lau, Isak Paredes, Nathaniel Lowe, and Julio Rodriguez. Rodriguez coming in at plus 550 against Seattle, taking on Mackenzie Gore and the Nats tonight. It's time for our GBank best bets of the night. They're brought to you by GBank. Introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you need to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card. In the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will then jump in and give you a $100 deposit match, and VSiN completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through August 31st. That's a $200 value. It's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. Head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions apply. Jeff, your GBank best bet of the night.
The New York Knicks are going to be digging, clawing, elbowing, doing anything they can to drag this game into the muck to stay alive in the series. Thus, I like the under 223.5. That's moved up, actually. It was 222.5. Mm-hmm. We'll take the minus 112 on the under 223.5.
Okay, I like it. I'm going to that game as well. Might be our last time to bet the NBA for a week. Pacers money line tonight. They're closing out the series. They're clinching it. They're advancing to the NBA Finals, where they will be big underdogs against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Pacers money line plus 145 tonight at DK. That's going to wrap it for us here on Prop Points. Stay tuned. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next.